This is TK331, a Star Wars EU/Legends podcast. I'm Crystal, a Star Wars enthusiast, but I've never read a thing I liked that I couldn't complain about a little bit.
And I'm Thomas, a Star Wars completionist who has previously read the entirety of the EU. So what are we reading today?
Today we are reading Dr. Death, The Tale of Dr. Ivazan and Ponda Baba, the 14th short story in Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina collection, written by Kenneth C. Flint, edited by Kevin J. Anderson, and published by Bantam Spectra, June 1995.
What a title. Dr. Death. Kenneth C. Flint has written two Star Wars short stories, this one and old friends Effant Mon's Tale in Tales from Jabba's Palace. He also wrote the novel The Heart of the Jedi, but that was cancelled and never formally published. However, the unpublished manuscript was posted online in May 2015, and in March 2021, it was unofficially sold as a paperback novel on Amazon, though it was pulled from Amazon sometime in May.
I remember this. I didn't read it, but I remember it happening.
Yeah, we picked a copy of it up. I read it. I enjoyed it. It felt like an EU novel of this era. I'm glad we have it.
Okay. Dr. Death tells the story of what happens to Dr. Ivazan and Ponda Baba after Ponda has his arm chopped off by Obi-Wan on Tatooine. For the first time in this short story collection, none of the story takes place on Tatooine. What a relief. I've been baking in the Twin Suns for damn near a year now. Gotta get off this planet. My skin is dry.
The story opens with two figures having dinner, and they hear an odd scraping sound outside over the storm. One of them sends a Medusa named Rover to check it out. And I love that this monstrous creature is named Rover. Medusas are jelly-like blobs and kind of remind me of a gelatinous cube from D&D, but they have stalks and can electrocute you.
Like an ooze.
Yeah. A little more form than an ooze, which is why I thought of the gelatinous cube.
It depends on the ooze.
Fair enough.
Like, there was that one undead ooze that just has a bunch of undead inside it, so I can imagine a bunch of arms sticking out.
Okay.
That one didn't do nearly as much damage as I was hoping it would. The other figure, an Aqualish senator and a member of the species' ruling class, is surprised that they were able to tame a Medusa. There are actually two Aqualish species. Members of the Aqualish ruling class can be identified by their fin-like, fingerless hands that have an opposable thumb. Ponda Baba is a member of the not-ruling class, as evidenced by his hairy, talon-fingered hand.
That's rough. The other figure is, of course, Dr. Ivazan, and replies that the Medusa was actually easy to train.
That's weird. Rover looks out the window and then gives Dr. Ivazan a signal.
He tells the senator to drop under the table as he pulls out a blaster and turns out the lights. And the senator's like, wait, what? What's going on? What? What? He's not used to combat.
He's a senator. Three figures burst through the
window.
So
was Leia.
Well, but in her heart, she's an agent of chaos. Three figures burst through the window. Dr. Ivazan manages to hit one of them. Blaster fight erupts between the other two and Dr. Ivazan. Rover manages to take out one of the two fighting. Dr. Ivazan wonders where Ponda is, and then Ponda bursts through the door and shoots the final attacker.
It's noted that Ponda now has a mechanical arm, and it's not a very good one.
It's too bad. Dr. Ivazan says that Ponda Baba hasn't been the same since an old man chopped his arm off on Tatooine. Well, you wouldn't be the same either. You'd be missing an arm.
Yep. Dr. Ivazan and Ponda had a falling out after that. They used to be really close partners who worked together just incredibly well. The senator says, though, but he's here now, so clearly you've got to patch things up, right?
Dr. Ivazan says, it's just because he owes this guy an arm, and Ponda is acting as his bodyguard until Dr. Ivazan can get the arm for him.
The senator asks who the attackers are, and Dr. Ivazan says that they're just some bounty hunters. Kind of thing happens to them all the time. Death in a dozen systems, you know. People want to kill this guy.
He then tells the senator that the senator is supposed to be protecting the doctor, but this is the third attack since he's been here. While they talk, Rover is happily eating the bounty hunters. It's like having a really robust Roomba.
That kills people.
Yep. Killer Roomba.
The senator then says that this whole process is costing too much and taking too long. And Dr. Ivazan says it's to free them, the Aqualish species, from the Empire, and isn't that worth it?
The senator says that is worth any price, but the subcommittee is worried about the budget of this project, nevertheless.
Dr. Ivazan says when the research is complete, he'll have a secret so valuable to the Empire that they'll give them freedom and anything else they want.
The Empire doesn't give out anything, even in exchange for secrets, so this is a faulty premise.
I wasn't noticed that. Senator doesn't.
Yeah. There are people who exist in the galaxy who still think you can bargain with the Empire. You cannot.
Well, you can't bargain with the Empire. You can bargain with, let's say, an ambitious Moff or Admiral or someone in power who wants to move up even
They're
more.
They're still going to screw you.
They probably will, but you've got a chance of bargaining with them rather than the Empire at large.
Maybe. Dr. Avizon says he's almost done. He just needs a strong male human.
The Senator asks for proof of what Dr. Avizon is doing. He's like, all right, fine. Let's go down to the lab.
This makes the Senator uncomfortable. He asks if can't he just see some data sets instead.
Avizon's like, no. The lab we go.
No papers. Lab only.
One of the bodies that is being munched on has a comlink on it, and a fourth figure outside is listening in on the conversation until said comlink is eaten along with the body.
This thing really is a news.
Yep.
The figure's name is Gurion, and he makes a call to Mother and says that everyone is dead but him.
It's unclear if this is his actual mother or just refers to his mother.
Because his whole family's dead, we find out later. Spoilers. Mother tells him to leave, but he says no, he can finish this. She tells him it's a suicide mission, but he doesn't care.
On the one hand, she doesn't seem like a mother. On the other hand, she actually does seem like she is genuinely concerned for him.
Yeah, but lots of people can be concerned for you who aren't your mother.
True. But be weird to then call them mother, I feel like.
I think that this is just some weird gang thing. Their leader is called Mother.
Yeah.
Dr. Avizon takes the Senator to the lab. It's full of cylinders with dead bodies inside them.
There are Jawas, Wookiees, Given, and more.
Dr. Avizon says they were all patients of his who didn't survive his work.
Note, listeners, if you ever see Dr. Avizon on, like, the doctor you're supposed to meet, go the other way. Just don't do it.
He had apparently, or so he says, meant to give them greater health and longer life through physical alteration. But he eventually realized that wasn't enough.
They just kept dying while he was trying to fix them. Make them better.
It was the mind that was the key, not the body.
So, he and Ponda stole equipment that was intended to alter droid programming, but he's adapted to use it on living beings instead, and is now on the brink of granting immortality. Basically, they can transfer someone's mind to a new, fresh body, and they can just keep on going. Of course, the mind in the fresh body is now gone. You're taking over someone's life.
Yep.
That's rough.
That seems like something the Empire would like.
Or that Avizon would do.
Yeah. Ponda then calls them and says that there's someone at the door. There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door.
You're going to do that.
He says his aqua speeder broke down and wants to come in and call for a lift.
Dr. Avizon brings up the image of the man outside and says to bring him in. He's the perfect specimen that he's been looking for. What luck!
Dr. Avizon has decided that this young man will be the first to be used for this procedure.
It'll be his new body.
And stuns him. He's excited about getting a new body, one that isn't known to law enforcement, but Ponda says he should go first.
His new body is also here. It's not young, but it's a member of the ruling class, which is good enough for him.
At this point, the Senator realizes what they're talking about. Him. But they force him back down to the lab.
They strap the Senator in, and then Ponda lies on a table next to him. There's a Frankenstein moment as Dr. Avizon uses the machinery, flipping levers, turning dials. I kind of imagine the maniacal laugh, lightning everywhere. You know, the whole shebang. And then it's over.
Dr. Avizon says that it worked, but the Senator's body that Ponda is now in is still unconscious.
He's like, eh, sometimes it happens. Give him time to adjust.
Sometimes it happens. He's never managed to do this before, so who knows?
He then goes back upstairs to inspect his new body. You know, he wants to see that's like, this is a good body. It's feel the muscles, all that stuff.
Gross.
But as he touches it, his hand goes through it. There's a hollow shroud around the body.
It's actually a very thin man, and they quickly fight.
This is not who Dr. Avizon wants to use for his new body. He is very upset about this. The thin man then pulls out a thermal detonator and tells Dr. Avizon to toss his blaster away. Dr. Avizon does so, and the thin man takes him to the roof and says, my name is Gurion, the man we met outside. He was, of course, listening in earlier, which is why he had the hollow shroud put on.
Dr. Avizon says that he can pay Gurion and even offers up immortality. Gurion says he's not in it for the money. His last name is Silazar, and Dr. Evazan killed 7 of his family members. So it's about the revenge.
Fair. They get to the roof with Revra following them. Gurion does not see him. Gurion calls Mother and says that he is the doctor, so she sends a ship down to retrieve them.
Dr. Evazan does see Rover and tries to distract Gurion. Gurion sees movement in Dr. Evazan's eyes and turns to face Rover as it attacks.
Dr. Evazan joins the attack and the detonator is dropped, but both Dr. Evazan and Gurion go over the edge of the roof.
Dr. Evazan manages to grab the edge, but Gurion does not and falls to his death.
Poor guy. Sadly. I feel really bad for him.
Yeah.
Dr. Evazan is not strong enough to pull himself up, no upper body strength, and then sees Ponda's old body above him.
It says the transfer went the wrong way, meaning the senator is now in Ponda's body, and Dr. Evazan has ruined his life.
And Dr. Evazan's like, uh-oh.
So the senator arms the detonator, drops it, and walks away.
With a burst of adrenaline, Dr. Evazan manages to get himself onto the roof, and the ship that Gurion called is almost there.
The explosion goes off and the ship flies away, saddened for Gurion, but happy that he got his revenge on Dr. Evazan.
But, turns out, he didn't.
Because Rover saved Dr. Evazan, killing itself in the process.
Dr. Evazan was shielded by Rover's gel-like body. It wasn't enough to save itself, but it was enough to save the good doctor.
Dr. Evazan thanks Rover and apologizes for his death. The story
actually feels remorse, like the only time.
Even evil people can love their pets.
Yep.
It's really weird. The story ends with him saying, backward. Damn. Oh well, maybe I'll get it right next time. So what'd you think of this one?
This is a weird, gruesome, almost gothic story. It's not exactly my cup of tea, but I thought this was really well done. Similar to Soupson bringing in a vampire-like being into Star Wars, I appreciate seeing a Frankenstein-like doctor in Star Wars.
But at least it's not as confusing as Soupson.
Oh, thank God. No, this is a much more straightforward tale. Like I said, it was well done. I'm not into gothic horror, but it had a good vibe going for it.
Yeah, it is a pretty weird and ridiculous story, but I also liked this one. It had a Frankenstein-y vibe, which I loved because I loved Frankenstein.
I do love Frankenstein. It's a great book.
Yeah. And, like, best of all, the cantina scene is far in the rearview mirror. It's referenced, and it had long-reaching consequences, but we're not on Tatooine, which I really appreciated. It's also super action-packed. Every page has something new happening. I appreciated the pacing. I felt like I flew through this story. It was almost like, I don't know, watching, like, a Bourne movie in a weird way. Like, it just, like, things happened quickly. There were fights, and they went down to the lab, and they come back up, and they go down to the lab, and they go back up to the roof. Like, it just moves. Yeah, it had good movement.
So, like you said, one thing I found very interesting is that this story is the first of these short stories to take place entirely off of Tatooine, and Tatooine was incredibly important and the inciting incident for this story, but it's really only briefly mentioned. And it was really nice seeing the story go elsewhere. But there's a part of me that wanted to see the immediate aftermath of what happened between Kenobi and these two. I guess what we can take from this is that what happened afterward was unimportant other than Dr. Evazan and Ponda growing apart, and nothing else important happens until now. I do know that Dr. Evazan does appear in other Star Wars stories like in Galaxy of Fear, so it's possible the story does exist somewhere else, and I just don't remember when and where.
Hmm. Interesting. Perhaps Dr. Evazan tenderly caring for Ponda Baba in the aftermath of the arm loss.
Not so tenderly.
Tenderly in his special way. Probably tried to plug all kinds of appendages onto that shoulder.
I could believe it.
Tentacles, claws.
Yeah.
Just any old thing. It also felt to me like everybody involved in this story, like the four major characters, so Evazan, Ponda Baba, the Senator, and Gurion, they all had a goal that they were striving for and an originating motivation for that goal. Even if, like, the eternal life thing is kind of an old shtick, that's Star Wars for you, it's not always very nuanced, but even so, these characters are not just bouncing through the plot, they create the plot by wanting things and then doing things to get the things they want.
Yeah.
Like, this is very baseline, but sometimes the stories in this collection do not clear this item for me. So I feel like it has to be mentioned.
Think back to the last one with Boshek that we did last month.
Yeah.
Like
he's just along for the ride. He's not creating plot. He's just being moved by the plot. I strongly prefer it to be the other way around. Characters create plot. Plot moves because characters are moving it.
Overall, I agree, but I do think a story like Boshek's can work sometimes, but it's, I think, harder to pull off.
I think it can work. So here's the thing. I think it can work in the short term in a longer form story, because there are lots of stories where for a brief time, especially at the beginning, the main character is resisting the call to adventure. So things just keep happening.
Think
to
of a new
them.
Hope.
Yeah. But eventually they make the decision and the mindset shift to cause things to happen instead.
I'm going to go with you to Alderaan.
The problem is in a short story, there is not space for both of those things. So I think you should start with a character who creates plot.
Okay.
Unless it's a novella, but then we're getting into longer form storytelling still. You have a little bit more time.
I do think it can work on a short story when they are doing the slice of life stories we've seen sometimes in some of these. Unless telling an important story.
I'm not saying that it can never work. I'm saying that the exceptions basically prove the rule.
Okay. That's fair. So, one thing I do need to mention. Under Disney and Marvel Comics, Dr. Evazon and Ponda Baba have both appeared in several issues of the Dr. Aphra comic. And I love Dr. Aphra. She is one of my favorite characters that's happened under Star Wars with Disney at the helm. And I urge you all to go read those. They're a lot of fun. Very different than this. A little more ridiculous because Aphra stories are generally more ridiculous. But I really like the Aphra comics. So I just want to plug those real fast.
Okay. This is really neither here nor there. It just, the story, Dr. Evazon reminded me of the weird doctor in Mass Effect 1 and Garrus's loyalty mission.
Dr. Hart?
Yeah,
Dr. I don't remember Hart. His original name, but he renamed himself Dr. Hart.
He has a similar, like, butchery of
patients. Uses his assistants as, like, walking test tubes and, like, has organs inside of them.
Yeah.
Might actually a little bit of that episode of Firefly as well.
Oh, God.
The guy with two hearts.
Clearly this is the thing that radiates through a certain subset of sci-fi.
The kind of sci-fi horror. It's not full horror,
but it's borderline.
Body horror, I think, would be the for it to go under.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that mission in as much as I like any mission in Mass Effect 1. I think it's a good game, but it clearly shows its age.
Yeah, having recently replayed it, I still love it, but the combat specifically has aged.
It's not even just the combat. It's like that things can feel a little hollow.
Mm.
Like, I also, it's probably been a year since I replayed it now. I think I replayed it last year when Legendary came out. But I just remember this, like, the way the characters talk to each other in early BioWare games, even in later BioWare games to some extent, is just very...
stilted almost?
Yeah. It's like they're actors in early talkies. Like, they can't move around too much because the mic and the boom is in one spot, so they have a limited range of motion, and nobody ever really talks over each other. It just feels kind of unnatural. This is neither here nor there in regards to the story, just that the vibe reminded me of it.
I would agree. And if you haven't played it, go play Mass Effect. Great game. Great series.
I feel like there's not a huge overlap between people who listen to this podcast and people who haven't at least tried to play Mass Effect.
That's fair.
Like, I feel like Star Wars and Mass Effect are...
they're buds.
I guess if you're just not a gamer, then...
yeah.
Maybe.
That wraps up Dr. Death. I don't know why I'm talking about it like, or saying it like that.
I don't know why you are either.
Dr. Death!
He definitely doesn't say it like that.
Next up, we'll be reading Champions of the Force, the final book of the Jedi Academy trilogy, written by Kevin J. Anderson, of course. You can look forward to that being published on October the 2nd.
Thanks to Thomas for editing.
And thanks to Crystal for going on this crazy idea.
And thanks to you for listening. You can email us at tk331podcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at tk331podcast. You can rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast review platform of your choice. You could tell a friend about it. You could talk about us on Twitter. We'd appreciate that.
If you're playing an online game, you can tell people you're playing with about us.
Wow. Yeah, you could do that. You could get a pack of sticky notes.
If you're playing Battlefront 2. Just saying, Star Wars game.
and you could go to your local independent bookstore and you could find whatever EU books they have in that local independent bookstore, and you could put TK331 on the post-it notes and just sort of stick it inside the front cover. And then people who pick up those books to buy them will also see a podcast that they can listen to about the books if they want to become fully immersed.
Assuming we've talked about that book. Someday we'll talk about the book.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually.
Might take a while.
I mean, while you're at it, you could just slap those sticky notes inside every book in the store.
Or just Star Wars canon books. We might get to those someday, too. Who knows?
I mean, I think that's a long way off.
Very, very long way.
I'm probably going to be in my 50s by that time, which is chilling. Concept
a little bit. And now here it is, Emo Star Wars.
Far below, halfway down one rugged side of the castle's high cliffs, a large bile green mound of goo lay motionless on a ledge. From its splattered edges, a thick yellow oil ran, dripping in greasy fat globules over the edge. Then the gel-like mass heaved and quivered, bulging upward out of the largest lump of its center. An arm suddenly shot forth, followed by another, and then by the head of Dr. Evazan. He took a great shuddering breath as he broke the surface, like a swimmer who'd been long under the sea. With some difficulty, he extracted himself from the blob that had once been his pet. Though the loyal creature had saved him by cushioning his fall, their hard impact together had squashed the Medusa's life from it. "Thanks, Rover," he said, plucking a last clinging streamer of the slime off his shirt. He bent and patted the ruptured mass. "Sorry, boy." He looked upward to the blasted castle. "Backward," he said regretfully. "Damn." Then he shrugged. "Oh well, maybe I'll get it right next time."